In the words of Meredith Marks, when it comes to that week, week and a half before my period, I wish I was disengaging. My PMS is off the charts. Truly, Uber Eats needs to check in and say, it's about that time, isn't it? I know it is. The cravings are crazy. I want to crawl out of my skin. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. For AGs who are friends of perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, Happy Mammoth has Hormone Harmony. It's not just a supplement for women going through those stages, it's also become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I'm engaging. I'm not a housewife or a hustler, but I know of fashion crime.
I don't need a seat at the table. I've already reserved the whole restaurant.
Okay. On that was gorgeous.
We're getting to our political housewives era. You got to make a statement with your tagline, like Ebony K. Williams. And I made a statement. The whole restaurant.
God forbid I say this. And in advance, rest in peace. But almost like the statement necklace of taglines. She's no longer with us.
She is no longer with us. R.I.P. You know. R.I.P.
May her memory be a blessing and also not uncool. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 227. Can you believe I just had to check that? I thought it was 226, but I just did 227.
That's literally wild. Okay, 227. Absolutely. That's incredible. That's incredible. That's a lot of episodes.
Just a little bit. Just like a little bit of a wonder.
I will say, that's a lot. You know your stuff. You've committed.
You know. Watched a couple episodes. What can I tell you?
Dabble in it, you know.
I dabble. And I'm so excited to do much more than that with this week's guest. You know Chris Murphy as the staff writer at Vanity Fair, comedian, and you also may remember his face. If you woke up today and decided to do your due diligence as an American, as a citizen of this world.
Your civic duty.
Your civic duty by watching the brand new Hulu documentary about Erica and Tom Girardi, The Housewife and the Hustler. Welcome to the People's Couch, Chris Murphy. Oh, wow. How are you?
I am so happy to be here. I mean, the timing is perfect. The doc came out today, you know, revelations. I learned so much. I'm in the doc and I learned so much from watching it. I was like, wow, this shit is even darker than I thought it was. And I thought it was dark.
Can I please tell you, we had this on the books for a hot minute. Didn't know you were... Oh, wait. I totally did know you were in the documentary. And I was like, let's schedule around it because I'm a genius.
You're a genius. Well, I like sort of forgot. And like, I was like, wait. Oh my God, it's out. Oh my God. Tom Girardi is one of the most duplicitous men who has ever existed. And I don't care that he's old and that he might have Alzheimer's. It has to be said. What he did to those people is bad. Was really terrible.
I have so many questions for you. First off, how did this happen? How did production approach you? Okay. Who came to you? How did this? I like knowing the ins and I like knowing the biz.
The doc biz. Oh my God, it's a crazy industry, you know, documentary films. ABC News.
The Wild West.
The Wild West. There's always knocking on your door. No, but really what happened, I used to be at Vulture. I was a part-time writer at Vulture, and I did Real Housewives recaps, Atlanta, Potomac.
Of which I have read many.
Thank you. They were honestly, it was such a gorgeous time to be alive, and just to spend that time with those women was really fantastic. And then I ended up getting this job at Vanity Fair, and they were like, we really want you to like do something about the Housewives. Like, you know, like we liked your stuff there. Like, let's come up with something. Just so happens within my first week of joining Vanity Fair, Jen Shah gets arrested for her national telemarketing scam fraudstress of the century. Whatnot. So I was like, okay, this is literally like manna sent from the heavens. Like, I have to write something about how literally insane it is that Jen Shah was a criminal mastermind and yet still felt the need to sort of put herself on screen in front of everyone, even though she'd been, you know, committing federal crimes, allegedly. I'll say allegedly. I don't want anybody to get sued. So allegedly committing federal crimes for 12 years. So I wrote this article about, like, you know, housewives with legal issues, and somebody at ABC News, it was on Vanity Fair, did pretty well. Somebody at ABC News saw and was like, hey, you must be in this Erica Jayne documentary. And I was like, yes, I must be in this Erica Jayne documentary.
First off, how pissed is Jen Shah that Erica Jayne got the ABC news?
She's seething. She is absolutely she's seething. She's pissed. She's like, that's the thing, is that like she wants what Eric honestly has so bad, which is like the Roxy Hart of it all. We call back to Erica Jayne being Roxy Hart in Chicago on Broadway, lest we forget.
Full circle.
Yeah, Jen Shah wants it, but I don't necessarily see it happening for her. Her GoFundMe was a huge flop. When only one person donated, it was $250. No one.
It was her. 100%.
Definitely, she definitely donated to herself to sort of get the ball rolling, and then the ball just never rolled because nobody should be donating to Jen Shah. But she's definitely pissed. But you know, it's just crazy. It's like we've been doing this. We've been playing this Housewives game for 15 years, and we still haven't learned the lessons of our patron saint Teresa Giudice. You know, don't put your hand in the cookie jar on national television. You're gonna get caught.
I mean, this is the thing, is like people often wonder why go on Housewives if you are potentially, allegedly, whatever, in the middle of doing some sort of financial crime or crime. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the answer to that is a lot of the people who have the level of narcissism that we love to celebrate.
We love to see it. We love to see it in others so that we don't have to look in ourselves and our own narcissism.
Oh. It's Amen. So, judgment starts at home at BravoTV.com. Yeah.
It absolutely does. Those in glass houses, as they say, you know.
Amen. I mean, look, Villa Rosa, are you calling?
Oh, my God. But yes, the level of narcissism. Yes, have the level. So,
they have the level, and it just so happens that that intersects, it meets at the intersection of people who think they will never get caught, who are doing these kind. So it's like people ask, oh, can you believe that we've had this laundry list of people accused of federal or whatever crimes who are appearing on Housewives? And it's like, yeah, that's honestly the audience of applicants these days.
It's the target audience. And they do believe that they're above the law, and they do believe that they are the ones who are never going to get caught. And honestly, for some of them, I think it's worth it because it's sort of like, or they think it's worth it because it's all about brand building and it gets their name in the press and all press is good press, blah, blah, blah. But it really exposes like an underbelly or a part of society. This is why I'm like, I'm still going to watch The Housewives, even though many of them are probably scammers, because these people would still be scamming even if they weren't on television, I think. I do think even if they weren't on The Housewives, as we see with Jen Shah, she was doing this long before, you know, she ever got on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. So it's like, these people exist and we need to know who they are. We need to know the signs. We need to know what to look out for so that we can protect ourselves. Because you know what I don't want? I don't want to lose all my money in a national telemarketing scam. All right. I need to know who's running the rackets, who's a grifter. Okay. We need to see these people for who they are. And Bravo gives us literally like front row access to the show. And so I'm gonna tune in because I need to protect myself and I need to protect my family from these
100%.
Women. 100%. And I also love them.
I mean, I love to watch them. I also think that like if the moral of the story on Housewives, and I do think that there are several morals one can take away
from watching these shows. But one of the morals on Housewives is like, all that glitters is not gold. Mm. And it turns out some of that fucking gold is stolen, and
some of that gold is stolen from widows and orphans and burn victims. Okay. Like, it's not even just stolen. It's not even like a Robin Hood steal from the rich. Like, it's literally, it's all that glitters is not gold, and it's pilfered. It's taken from real Americans and real people. And that is like, and that is a honestly a tough lesson. I won't speak for you, Sarah, but I've been known to suffer from this little sort of medical condition called jealousy. It's really helpful.
It's a chronic condition. Over here.
You know, there is no cure. I have the best doctors
symptoms
on
are
it.
Tough.
They're tough.
Yes.
But I will say, watching the Housewives and watching sort of the rise and fall of all these women, it really does sort of help. Be like, actually, you know what? Me and my little studio apartment, you know, that I could barely afford, I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. Because at least I didn't steal this apartment from victims of the Lion Air plane crash. Okay. Like,
I can at least say that. I can guarantee you, you're in a better financial spot than Erica Jane.
Yeah. It's actually like thinking about her, like literally her physical assets at this moment, which I think was a really actually interesting part of the doc, where it's like she probably now has more money than Tom. Tom had like, he like blew through $80 million. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't make that make sense.
It was only 50 in cash, as he said. Only 50. You lost 30 right there, guys.
Right there. Only 50 in cash. You know, and that's, you know, he should have put it all in crypto. But anyway, it was. It's just like thinking about how she literally has, we can see, and because she's been on the show for long, I spent more time in Erica Jane's closet than I have in my own closet. Like, I could tell you her Chanel bags or Louis Vuitton or Balenciaga. Like, she has actual capital in assets in clothes alone. And that all probably has to go away. I can't really see a scenario where she gets to keep 80% of that.
I mean, I have so many questions for the folks who produce this documentary, including, listen, any timing for the release of this was going to be good timing, yeah, because everyone's talking about it. But for it to come out the week that the divorce announcement episode is airing is something.
That's a chef's kiss moment. That's a moment that we really love. We love to see it.
We love to see it. And also, we've seen the Cartier Panther ring. I think she has two. I forget, honestly, at this point. But the creditors will remind me. I mean, her defense of, like, protecting her assets is that everything he gave her was a gift. But there are allegations. First off, there's the question of, like, will that even protect you?
Yeah.
And Sunny Hostin on the doc was like,
she was like,
LOL.
She was like, actually, no. She was like, lol, like, no, good try, though. But maybe.
Yeah, circle back with something else.
Yeah.
But there is also the huge question of, like, with the timing of this, with all of the various financial crimes that Tom has committed really coming into the public consciousness in the last year.
In the last, like, 8 months.
In the last 8 months. How do we now look at this storyline that's going to come out on BH of her leaving him and then, from what we've seen her do on social, pretend it's because 15 years ago he had an affair?
Yeah, I'm not buying that. Two, I mean, like, we can get into Beverly Hills, which I do think we're having a pretty great season thus far. I think
we're phenomenal
season. I'm really liking what we're getting from Beverly Hills. But I, like, honestly, and I say this with love, I will not believe a word that comes out of her mouth about anything, anything regarding the divorce, anything. She's too smart. She's too shrewd. And that doesn't make, I'm sorry, the affair was 15 years. It just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't add up. It just simply doesn't. All right. There is, like, maybe she didn't know, like, the full extent of where all the money was coming from. But, like, she's, you know, in his company. She's a secretary of the Girardi Trust. Like, It's not adding up. And I don't need her to necessarily spill all the beans, but if she's going to try to pretend like she, like, they fell out of love, or she's now just, you know, feeling the wounds of his affair, save it for somebody else. I wasn't born yesterday. I know I look young and gorgeous, but I'm not stupid.
Gorge.
And wasn't born yesterday, Erica. You're going to need to do something else. And she's not going to say anything. And that's the thing with Erica. She's not going to actually say anything. I think it's just going to be a lot of, like, I think all the previews have shown us everything she's going to say about Tom in this situation. I think that's all we got from her.
I mean, the wild shift to me is going to be not only her grasping for straws and, like, what is she going to say about the breakup of their marriage, and also how in real time is she going to potentially help Tom, you know, like Pasadena house selling, like, where is he staying? Like,
where is he going to stay? He needs help. He's literally old. Like, that's, we do have to be, he is old. He needs help.
I mean, he's got his brother. I don't know what to tell you. Hopefully his brother has a couch. That's, you know, like,
I'm 81 years old sleeping on your brother's couch. That is literally so dark, but not nearly as dark as all the crimes that he allegedly committed. So we all, again, anything that sounds somewhat sympathetic towards Tom and Erica is undercut by the fact that what happened was literally terrible. But he is 81, and I don't think an 81 year old should be sleeping on a couch.
The couch is so much better than his other option, which is jail.
which is federal prison.
So, like, the couch might not be looking so bad if it's in his, like, brother's rec room instead of wherever. That might be slightly less pleasant for him. But how is she going to, is there any chance for her to help him at all? What do you think of this? Like, what do you even do from a PR perspective? And this is your husband of however many years.
I don't know. I wish that I had, like, a really, this is exactly what, I wish I could be like, you know, like Olivia Pope and be like, this is exactly what, you know, Erica Jane should do. And I do think it was interesting that they sort of were like, they remember when she was like involved with Armie Hammer? Do you remember that? Like that sort of like that popped
Crazy
up.
Days and Nights. There was like a little bit of a blind rumor.
Yes, that was that happened. I was like, that's also not that's not the road you want to go down either. I mean, we got two paths and they're both sort of equally bad. We've got to find something else. I do think it would help if she were more, and this is something, it's not in her character. She is sort of a naturally cold woman who, like, then will get emotional. She'll open up in, like, these, like, in the, like, very specific, like, moments. And that's what we sort of loved about her on the show. But it would be helpful if she was, like, a little bit more forthcoming. Like, I don't see her doing that, one, legal reasons, and two, that's just not her character. I think she's gonna keep everything so guarded, so close to her chest, and we're just gonna have to wait and see what happens.
I mean, remember Eileen, God forbid.
Oh, that was the best scene in that was, I will say this did get cut from the doc, and I have no idea why they cut this from the doc, but I basically like word for word did their whole like, don't you talk about my son, like, exchange. And somehow that didn't make the final cut. I don't know what ABC was thinking.
Yeah, they could have maybe cut around Dana, Pam, and Danielle. P.S. The casting of the talent from like the housewife
perspective
world,
is dark. It's bleak.
It did make a lot of sense because both of these women have been either accused or charged with crimes. You know, Dana Pam pled guilty. Mm-hmm. I forget what happened with Danielle.
Yeah. Well, Danielle, you know, you left the book at the chateau. You left the book at the chateau, you know, you can never forget. But the Danielle stop of it all was really crazy. And I do say this with love. She did have a lazy eye in it, sort of, which is okay. Or like one of her eyelashes was so heavy that it was like sort of like off kilter. And then like her auburn hair, it was a lot to see her again in like in this way talking about Erica Jane, who she was like, I don't really know Erica, but we did watch What Happens Live once, so I'm gonna talk about her in this doc.
She said we worked together at Watch What Happens,
which is not,
I
didn't
know that Danielle did catering. Or
where's her, like, yeah, her PA? W-9 did, yeah, did she, yeah.
I know, where's her 1099 from that, if you made 500 or less,
if you worked together. I need to see some documentation. It sounds like you were both sort of just on the show at the same time, which is fine. And again, I celebrate, it's like, I don't know Erica, and I was in the dark, like, I celebrate, you know, Danielle Staub doing it, but with Danielle Staub, and we have to be honest, there's always an ulterior motive. She wasn't there to talk about Erica, she was there to trash every house, like, she was there to just talk shit, and that is kind of fun ultimately, and like, that is kind of fun.
I mean, she was there to be there. I mean,
that's so true.
Purpose served, so they could say they had a former housewife, and then they also had, you know, Dana Pam, whose lower third was like cast member, because you can't say housewife.
I barely remember her. Is that bad to say? She barely like lodges into my memory, Dana.
She is only memorable for being deeply, what's even the word? Essentially begging the cast members to like her to the extent of like telling Camille, yeah, we'll get to know each other in like peace and love at your Hawaii place. And like, Kim, I just met you 3 seconds ago, but the fact that you fucked up my name makes me feel like I love you.
No.
And Kyle were sisters. It was all very needy in a way that was a little too much.
Groveling. That's why when I don't like when people grovel, and that's the I eject it from my memory. I don't wanna hold that. I don't wanna hold that energy in my consciousness. I just don't need it.
I completely agree. I mean, the thing that I take away from the documentary, I wasn't expecting it, and I mean this in the best possible way, like
to be good.
The focus on.
Sorry,
no, I knew it was gonna be great. Even if it was terrible, I was gonna fucking love it. No. But to have actual personal stories from the victims of his fraud, who are themselves already survivors or victims of some horrific crime or natural disaster.
Tragic accident.
Tragic accident. Like, to see these people and understand their stories, to see the scars from someone who had the in and outside of his body burned.
Like truly 80 to 90% of his body fully basically burned. Like it was crazy. And it's the one when they asked me to do the doc, they said like, yeah, we're probably going to talk. They were like, we might talk to some victims of some of Tom's alleged scams. But I had no concept that they were going to like actually find like real, like absolutely deeply traumatic, like really fucking like legitimate victims. And that's the thing that this sort of the doc sort of like crystallized. It's like, oh no, Tom was working with like actual victims of horrific accidents and then taking their money and using it to make, you know, it's expensive to be me, like, you know. And that is something that we all have to reckon with, and I'm still sort of just processing that. But it was really that element of it was actually very harrowing and really crazy. I think that's a very important part. It was a very important part of the doc to provide a real face to these, like, you know, you read the news, you read the Daily Mail, you see, you know, you hear, you know, rich guy did mean terrible thing. But then when you see the actual people that are suffering, it changes things. It really does.
And it also leaves a big question mark on the narrative for the season moving forward, because now we have this in our back pocket, and yet we are going to start a cycle of episodes where Erica is being positioned as the victim in this, that her husband has done wrong, something happens, then we get more information about his criminal misdoings, allegedly. Yeah. And there's a moment at a dinner, I think it's Dorit who references it, who like says the catch-all
she
of
says,
orphans,
widows and orphans in her universal, her continental child of the world accent that it cannot be placed.
We love a child of the world and also Connecticut.
And also, yes, literally Connecticut, which is very much not in the world.
But how do you position, like, how do you look at that as an observer, as a writer, as a philosopher of all things housewifery? Mm-hmm. How do you take that in, noting we don't really know how the edit is going to go? I mean, we all saw the trailer, but a trailer does not a season arc make.
True.
How do you feel about the ways that this story may or may not be told?
I think Erica on the defensive is not really where we see her, you know, shine. I can think of some moments like, you know, I actually take that back. She doesn't shine on the defensive. And I think she's going to be on the defensive the rest of the season. I think she is, as you just said, she's going to try to spin this as I was also a victim of Tom's, you know, machinations and of his, you know, scams and his, you know, his fraud or what have you. And that I don't think it's enough to carry the season. And it's so good that we actually have other things to sort of pay attention to. Mm-hmm. The Sutton and the Crystal of it all, the Garcelle and the Lisa Rinna of it all. I don't think it's going to take center. I don't think it's going to become the center storyline, because I honestly do not think Erica will give us enough to work with. I think she's just going to be, I was a victim too, and that's all I'm going to say about that. And I don't see her either, you know, owning up. I absolutely don't see her taking responsibility for any aspect of this in any capacity. I do not see that happening whatsoever. I'm sure her lawyers are like, don't say anything, and don't say anything that makes you see it sound even a little bit culpable, because that's like, you know, and it's because that would be bad. And honestly, you know, commend, you know, batty ass Dorit for being like, what, you know, for bringing up the widows and orphans. But I really, and maybe, and I love to be proved wrong, but I don't see us scratching more than the surface of this. I think it's just like a specter to, that's going to sort of be a cloud over the whole season. And that's going to be sort of what, you know, Erica's going to be on the defensive, and we'll get like, you know, every single thing that she says about Tom now. I'm like, and the producers this season have been really good about keeping every single thing that she says about him. That like this innocuous, like he got up today, or like, you know, like, oh, like he bought me this, you know? So it's like, they're very smart to do that. But I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, jaded, but do you think Erica's going to really get into it? I just don't see that.
No, I think you're totally right. I think that she is by nature, she is not a woman who is communicative about her feelings. And usually her points of vulnerability, aside from her conversation with her mom, for example, her points of vulnerability are usually when she feels triggered into anger.
Yes.
So she responds in a way that is her version of like, not violent, but like her version
she's
of...
She's on the attack.
And she does the thing of the crying when you get angry thing, which I also do, because you're so... You internalize everything. So sometimes the only thing that can really kick shit into gear is when you're past a 15. You've... 1 to 10 is like, goodbye, that was 3 years ago. You're on the 15,
yes,
en route to the 20, and ready to fuck someone up. I mean, I think that's what we're going to see with this scene with Sutton, is not a woman who is comfortable or interested in sharing, regardless of whether or not there are legal teams watching each app. I think this is someone who, for the betterment of her personal life and career, has always kept things
under wraps.
Very, very under wraps,
very close to her chest. And that's why, and people, and I was saying this last season too, I covered one episode of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and I was like, I think we're done with Erica, honestly, because I was like, look, we get her shtick. Her shtick was so fun at the beginning. And then when she was sort of triggered into being quick to anger, into being like attacking, like the Eileen moment when Kyle was like, we're not friends. And she was like, I thought we were friends. Like, that was amazing. But we get like one big moment like per season, and then, or like a couple, and then they would sort of like whittle down. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm good on Erica. She's not giving me what I need. She's not bringing anything to the table, because she is keeping all of her emotions close to her chest, which I think is actually her authentic self. I do not think that she's like, that's like a, you know, a pretend thing. I mean, I think Lisa Rinna is like the most inauthentic person that's ever existed. I don't believe a word that I throw her out with the bathwater. I'm not a Lisa Rinna person. But Erica, I was like, okay, I do think authentically she just keeps things sort of like inward and whatnot, but that's not that interesting anymore. Like, I feel like we've squeezed all the juice out of that lime, so to speak. But then this huge bombshell happens. It's like, okay, no, I definitely want to see how she moves through that. But I don't think, I guess what we were saying is, I don't think it's gonna be that different than anything that we've seen from her before. I don't expect her to change it up, really.
Can I just tell you how into you I am? Stop. I am so into you.
Okay, the connection.
That was perfectly said. The Rinna of it all. You had to go there with the inauthentic. And I am so here with you on this journey. It's not, though. It is the truth.
It is the truth.
You are saying the actual truth.
Thank you. And I'll say it again, too. And again, I, you know what? She gave us the one tear and the bunny. We love that. Great.
Phenomenal.
Amazing acting. Honestly, incredible performance.
We're not taking that away from her.
But every single solitary second she's on the screen, she's doing something. She's trying to give us, she's trying to give the gays everything they want. She's trying to give the viewers everything they want. And it's just so false. And it's just so, her trying to backtrack the Denise of it all this season, because she knows that it came across poorly online. It's like, no, like, you did that. Stand by. But the thing is, like, she doesn't care. She is so fake and phony. And she even says the line in the trailer, what's wrong with being fake and phony? I don't want to watch fake and phony. I don't want to watch that. I actually am not interested.
We've already seen it. There are people who are being authentic on Beverly Hills, and Rinna is so obviously not one of them. And the reason that Garcelle I mean, there are many reasons, but one of the primary reasons that Garcelle is like taking a step back from these scenes with her is because Garcelle understands that Rinna doesn't believe anything that she's saying.
Not a word.
Or she believes it because she knows that's what other people are communicating to her, but she doesn't necessarily understand it, which is the position a person would almost require needing to take. If you are the kind of person who is strategizing, what's the narrative I can attach to this related to my story, related to my personal history, whatever it is, so that I can excuse not being there for my friend while still taking some sort of superficial responsibility.
Yes.
Oh, I know. I'll tell the story of when Harry's friend went to prison for sexually assaulting someone.
Raping someone, which is crazy.
For raping someone. And I am going to connect that person's guilt and terrible crime.
To Denise Richards.
To Denise Richards, whose story has been...
It's shady. It's not bulletproof by any means. It's
not bulletproof. And also the reason that I think this is so especially disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, please launch in. Please go there.
Is because there was a moment on last season of Beverly Hills when Brandy is telling the story, and there is a way that she has introduced the possibility that consent was not necessarily on the table, that she was not in a position where she gave full consent.
Yes.
Now, regardless of my feelings about Brandy.
Well, that's a lot.
Which is a lot. Again, you and I.
Kindred.
It's super kindred. Regardless of that, once you say that consent was not necessarily given, I immediately shut down all conversation because you are introducing to me that something happened that is potentially very, very serious and needs to be discussed, needs to be unpacked. In a serious way, we need to have a real conversation about what consent means and how it can potentially apply. No one ever went back to that in any way, I don't think.
No, they I really don't think they did either. I think they really sort of brushed past that and they were just like, oh, Brandy's crazy and Denise is a liar. They just launched onto Denise as a liar, which like, fine, but clearly the situation was way more complicated and potentially fraught than anyone was willing to give it. But they just wanted to... It was a witch hunt, like not to, you know, it was a witch hunt against Denise and led by Lisa Rinna, who now realized that she sort of, in a, you know, came across as sort of like slut shamey and mean and vindictive and a bad friend and wants to walk it back. While also, as you said, like connecting what happened to something that like was very serious and very personal, but I'm sure it has... Actually, literally, that story, and I'm so glad Garcelle said it, it has literally nothing to do with Denise Richards. It has not, it, like, we, like, at least from, like, the way that she was presenting it, she was trying to equivocate between the two, and Garcelle was like, don't do that.
And also, her mom was the victim of an almost, like, fucking murder by a serial killer or whatever.
Lois.
So you should know better. I mean, yeah, justice for Lois and all
Lois
cases,
was great.
But, like,
yeah.
Lois is phenomenal. Her birthday just happened. I think she was like 93.
Oh my God.
So, looks phenomenal.
I love that for her. Oh my God. Happy birthday, Lois. Happy birthday, Lois. Yeah.
Love that journey. But for Rinna to take a serious crime and use it in a way of like casual reflection.
Yeah, justifying her.
With friends. Right. And saying, listen, and when I look back, could I have texted Denise? Could I have checked on her? Could I have simply kept my mouth shut, which is very different from visiting your sexual assaulting friend in jail? Could I have simply stopped egging people on? And we still don't quite get why that happened or an understanding that Rinna gets... why that didn't happen, because now she's having an aha moment that makes all of us go, what the fuck?
Exactly. And the thing is, if we go back to like the, you know, break the fourth wall of it all, is that she couldn't be quiet and she couldn't, you know, stop egging it on, because she wants, she's like, this is the storyline, this is the engine for the season, and I'm gonna make this the engine of the season, when it didn't even need to be. But then that's what it became, because she insisted upon it, and she was really the ringleader of that. But she can't say that. She can't say, oh, the reason why I was like such a bad friend to Denise is because I was like, okay, this is our season and I'm going to make the season happen, you know, and I was manipulating and trying to, you know, act as like producer, but also star. And like, you know, and I will say, and this is going to be maybe also controversial, justice for Lisa Vanderpump, because she was doing all this work in a much less sweaty, in a much less obvious way. Like, she was 100% manipulating and selling articles to Radar Online and whatnot and making the season happen, but in a way that never came across as just as bereft of any sort of integrity or whatever. I mean, I think Lisa Vanderpump LVP is like a bastion of integrity. That's not what I'm saying, but she did it in a less sweaty way. Every move Lisa Rinna makes, I can see the beads of sweat, you know, I can see all the notes in her little, you know, her little book to make it happen. And I don't like that.
Here's my question. Rinna couldn't be more inauthentic.
Yes.
Erica Jayne present, I would say, this season. Funny, has had some great
very funny.
I loved her. Very funny. Maybe because she has nothing else left but humor, because she's like selling the mink and the furs. I couldn't tell you, but like, I'm here for the confessionals that we're getting.
Take back your fur. Guys and dolls moment. We love little guys and dolls.
Adelaide.
She would be good in that. I would love to see her as Adelaide, though, but that's a different.
I would love to see her lament.
Lament would be really, that could be really good. Erica Jayne's lament.
That could be really something. But when I think about Erica Jayne, I don't know quite what the future holds for even my interest on her on Housewives, because all of this stuff is going on and it is honestly very engaging. This is like crazy.
It's literally, you couldn't even write, like, if you wrote it in a book or something, I'd be like, it's too much. Like, this is actually literally, you know, you're telling me the lawyer that was, you know, Aaron Brockovich lawyer did all this literally awful, like, it, and then his wife is a house. It's like actually like a hat on a hat. But I do agree that while I was sort of like, I was on the down with Erica last season, I was like, I'm so happy for her with Chicago, but she's like she's not here. She's like doing Chicago. I'm happy to have her stay just to sort of see how she wades through this. Mm-hmm. But my hopes aren't high that it will bring, you know, the drama of the season. I honestly think Sutton is going to be the burst, is the lightning rod of the season. And she's not for me, but I do think she's vitally important. I'm happy that she's on the show. I'm happy she has a diamond. Or what do they hold diamonds? They hold diamonds.
They hold diamonds. Noting that Rinna is inauthentic, yada, yada, would you take away her diamond, or would you just like to see her?
I think it's time. I think it's time. Really? I think it's time. I don't even want to see like an LVP type, like, you know, season-long thing. I just think, like, honestly, she should have left around the Camille Kim days. I think she really was in the Yolanda era. That was great. I think she's outstayed her welcome. And she's not like a Kyle, where it's like you want an anchor, you know? She's not a Kyle. She's not a Ramona. Even I can't stand Ramona, but, like, I do understand the need for Ramona on Roni. I just think she's outstayed her welcome. I think she's not giving. And I also think, I will say, while Roni, one to two cast members too small this season, Beverly Hills, maybe one cast member too big or so. And I would give,
really?
I really like, I think that the amount of women is like almost perfect, but I think there's maybe like one too many. And I would give Lisa Rinna the chop. She'd be my first chop. And I say this as I do not like Sutton.
I hear you. With the Rinna stuff, it's like, I just think I am just really here for people understanding that she is the villain in this story.
Yeah, she is
I'm
the
like
villain.
Very here for that. I don't know if I want her gone. I just love getting revenge.
Yeah. I think it's going to be so hard. I just feel like it's so, maybe, but I honestly, now that we've got like actually like, finally, we are stepping up the game. There was no one who was really who could take on Lisa Rinna. Kyle's not going to take on Lisa. Teddy Mellencamp, are you kidding me? Like, literally,
All out.
Absolutely not going to take it. Couldn't even if she tried. But now we've got Garcelle. Mm-hmm. Now we've got Crystal. We've got some people who actually have what it takes. And like, well, Kathy's on a different planet, which I'm obsessed with her, but like literally on a different planet. But we've got some energy. And I will even throw Dorit in the mix of like people mm-hmm. who are able to sort of engage and hold Lisa Rinna's feet to the fire. And if that happens, which Garcelle is sort of doing, that I want to see.
I mean, the difficulty is that there is this weird blood oath thing happening with Dorit, Kyle, Rinna, Erica yeah. Jane. It's the Fox Five. Who am I missing from the fifth? Dorit, Kyle, Erica Jane, Teddy's recipe. Oh, maybe they still include Teddy.
I think they probably still include Teddy, but I feel like which is like literally no, but
so sad for them. Sad for this.
But yeah, they are really tight. You're right.
So how do we, I mean, the question to me is how do we break that up? But maybe it's not about breaking it up. I mean, I think Rinna will go in whatever direction she feels
is most
advantageous. Like provides her the most stability. And now we have a lot of energy from people who are not connected to that alliance. Mm-hmm. And P.S. I will have to just give the cautionary that like Dorit, I felt, was a really great translator last season with translating like on behalf of Denise. Mm-hmm. So I do think that she, while she's like super, super close to them, especially Kyle, I do see her being like more of a human person still, which is
insane.
Super hero trait.
Yeah. How is she able to pull that off when she's literally not of this world? Like she's, she's truly an alien from like, you know, like Euro land dropped down. But I agree that she somehow has remained human because she's the one who's not afraid to sort of ask mm-hmm. the tough questions mm-hmm. and she does it in her like random weird like you know way but she does it.
And now we have you know Sutton really in the mix. We know from the jump she's a diamond holder, yes. which gives her a lot of power in which to try to use her voice until Erica Jane does her best to, you know, diminish it accordingly. Mm-hmm. And we have Garcelle, who to me feels so open this season. There have been moments where Rinna will say something terrible and I'm talking out loud. I'm like, you stupid bitch. Like, whatever you're saying, blah, blah, blah. And then Garcelle sums it up in a way that is so much superior to what I'm thinking and literally saying out loud. I'm like, oh, I don't need to give any kind of narrative on top of this as I'm hate watching.
Garcelle's got
moments.
It. She's got
Garcelle's
it.
Garcelle's got it. And she's like in a real, she's giving big zero fucks energy. Mm-hmm. And the Garcelle plus Sutton plus Crystal, who I know people.
I'm a huge Crystal. I love Crystal. She's kind of a bitch, and I like that. Why shouldn't she be a bitch? Like, what? Why? Like, you're confronted with Sutton. Sutton's being literally ridiculous in front of you, and like, you know, low key, like, racially insensitive, and like, you call her out on that, and she starts crying, and she does her white, you know, white woman tears, white fragility mm-hmm. tears. Like, no, like that is annoying. Like why should she be like, I'm just like, why should she be nice? Like, yeah, Sutton is a ridiculous, everything she said is correct, but she's so like sort of uncaring about how she's coming off in a way, Crystal. Mm-hmm. She really is sort of just like, this is how I feel. Like, I don't feel that she's performing. I mean, she had her little, she cried for a second. I think that was, you know, maybe somewhat performative, but she feels very real to me. Like, she feels real to me, and I like that.
She feels so real, and I feel like people need to understand that this is a miracle. They found someone with great wealth
yes.
in Beverly Hills who's obviously watched the show,
who is
her own human person.
Yes.
That is impossible on almost any franchise aside from Potomac,
yeah.
which has done A++ Olympic levels on casting, you know, like after the OG season when that can be like a little tough and you have a little bit of a dance. Mm-hmm. They've done a really, really solid job. And Beverly Hills is like, guys, we haven't had that.
We haven't.
So you may not agree with, do I agree with the language she used with Sutton? Of course I don't.
Yeah.
Do I do I agree with some of the anger that she feels? I mean, it's her anger. It's her anger to feel.
And I can see why, if I were her, like why I would be angry. Like her anger to me is I wouldn't say justified, but it's very rational. I think it's very much like, I understand why she's angry. I think being around Sutton is exhausting. I think it's absolutely exhausting. And I think it's sort of like literally, and some people have the bandwidth for it and some people don't. And I think Crystal's just one of those people who doesn't have the bandwidth to deal with people who are silly and ridiculous and delicate and literally too delicate for this earth. And Sutton is like too delicate.
I think Sutton's, and I don't mean this in any way as a joke, I think Sutton is genuinely exhausted by Sutton. I really think that she is, but like for real, I think that around, her I think it is a form, I think that what we are seeing is an exhibited heightened form of anxiety.
Yes.
And mixed with potential anxiety about expressing said anxiety and being vulnerable to it. And I don't know, 10 other things, because with each of these housewives, we watch their experiences and it's like, oh, well, I don't understand why that person reacted in that moment. What we're all forgetting is, okay, this woman is what, 45 years old? She has 45 years of potential triggers, nuances, tragedies, everything with Sutton's father and her mother being in the mental health field, which also makes me wonder, was Sutton ever treated after her father's death by suicide? Like who was there to help Sutton after this terrible moment? And there's, and so you are understanding, you're getting information about these women, but then there's a scene and it's like, well, why did Sutton respond in that way? Why was Sutton crying in that moment? Why did Sutton literally have a roller, a $25 roller from Amazon? She goes, no, I'm buying tomorrow. That, why did she have that fucking roller on her face? And it's like, well, you know what? Because we're all thinking of, well, she's reacting in a way that feels out of character, too much for this scene. But there's like 45 years of whatever she has experienced in her life that's leading up to that moment. And P.S., that same empathy or understanding or whatever needs to be applied to Crystal.
Yes, which I don't think people do. It's so easy
people
for them
not
to.
Doing that
they're
online.
Not doing it online. They're just like, she's mean. They're just like, she's mean and she's. And I do think that, like, I totally agree that Sutton has all this learned behavior that she's not just going to unlearn now that she's, you know, 45 and on The Real Housewives. And so, like, she keeps falling back into these things, and that's how she sort of like processes and sees the world. But that's the thing that always happens, I feel, with these, with like these houses of color, is that they're not extended the same grace to sort of like be who they are. And this is what we're seeing with Ebony and with Onroni, which I think is even more egregious. Like, I mean, like, what she's, it's literally crazy. It's really, I think it's so interesting that we're reaching this point where it's like, guess what, we did this for 12, 13 years, sort of like segregated housewives, you know, the blondes in the OC, the brunettes on New York, black people in Atlanta.
You're not wrong.
No, but we did that. And now it's like, what happens when we actually put people, because how the world works is that actually for many people is that you run into people who have different backgrounds and different perspectives, and let's see what happens. And I know some people don't like that element of it because it makes it less fun and silly, but it does make it more real and actually more, I think the stakes are higher and actually it's more engaging. And I think it's important. And I think it's like, and I understand if people don't necessarily love the method that Crystal has been using to sort of get through to Sutton, or not, or the fact that she doesn't even care about it. She's just like, you're annoying and you're crazy, which is a bad word to use. But I don't think you can sit there and look at Crystal and be like, yeah, what her read of Sutton is incorrect. I don't think her read of Sutton is incorrect at all.
And we also have no idea why or how or if this is triggering anything from Crystal's life in any way. We don't know if a part of this is the fact that this woman is not even allowing her to express the moments in her life in which she has felt marginalized as a woman of color who is cut off. The fact that I genuinely get this. The fact that she was naked in her room. P.S. If someone knocks on the door, knocking is not enough.
It's
you have
not.
To wait for that person to say,
come in.
Or say, right, come in. That's to knock on the door is like the announcement. You're about to be, you know, you're personal whatever is about to be possibly violated in some way because you haven't actually given permission for that person to I have a thing about knocking because I'm really
I understand that I have my moments
but yeah. I just
privacy is important and respecting privacy is important too, and I don't think that's, and we'll see what if Crystal, because I don't want her to like die on that hill of like that's why I don't like Sun. I think that's like I think that's like maybe an isolated incident that like okay Sun made a mistake and whatnot and hopefully they can get past that. But I do think that like we're really genuinely seeing two people who had never, who are not used to, at least on Sutton's side, or do not know how to operate in the same world. They do not, like they live in the same zip code or close to the same zip code, but they very much do not operate in the same world. And that is thrilling to behold. And I think, you know, mistakes have been made on both sides, but I don't think Crystal is getting a fair shake. And I think that like, she's, yeah, I think maybe she's a little, a little cold or a little like, you know, not super sensitive.
She's the perfect franchise.
Perfect franchise. And maybe not super sensitive to Sutton's feelings, but also Sutton feels too much. Like, I think Sutton does feel, I think, and that's anxiety. I think she's too easily, you know, set off.
I mean, listen, everybody has their own journey, but we all have boundaries and the right to have them. And some of those boundaries come at the cost of friendship. And I've had that where I'm like, listen, there are people that come into your life who are wonderful people, but they need more than you are able to provide. Yeah. And what we appear to be watching right now is Sutton possibly needing, even if she's not asking for it, needing more than Crystal is able to give her, especially as people just meeting each other, especially under the construct of reality TV, especially with everything else that's going on in those relationships. Beverly Hills is incredibly complicated right now.
Complicated, but in a very watchable way. And I understand, and like, not to be like, I love Crystal, but I understand like, yeah, Sutton needs more than Crystal can give. And I understand Crystal being like, I'm not giving, I don't owe you anything. I'm not going to give you what you want. And I think that's the thing is like, Sutton's being sort of clear about like what she wants and that she, and like, and who she is, and it's just not being reciprocated. And like, that's like, but that's the world, Some people just don't get along. That, all of this being said, even though I'm not for Sutton, I think she is so crucial to the series. I'm really happy she has a diamond. I really think she needs to be on the show. I'm like watching, you know, I'm sort of like over Kyle. I mean, like Kyle, you need, cause that's, you know, you gotta have one stalwart.
I'm a Kyle apologist.
I like her.
Yes. We need a beta. We need a strong beta.
Well, that's what I like when Kyle's beta. When Kyle tried to be, you know, LVP, that doesn't work. Jester. You're Jester. We don't want you as queen. So Kyle, and I feel like she's not really trying to be queen anymore. I think she's sort of just like, you know, she sort of stepped back. I think she tried it. It didn't work. Like, let Kyle be beta. Let her burn the salmon. Like, that's fun. And then you got like the Kathy Kyle. That's fun. I think Kyle's having a good season because Kathy, God love her. She literally does not know how to exist in the world. Like, she is so rich and is so sheltered from the realities of the world. She can't plug in a fucking fan. She can't plug in a fan. She doesn't know what Red Bull is.
Here's the thing. It's like, it's not that she doesn't know how to plug in a fan. She does not care to learn, or someone else can do it for her. And that is not so much, it is a privilege, but like, Kathy and I share that personality trait of like, I do have my super fob, like the curtains in my, you know, like this was Fabio's nephew, my super's nephew, because like, could I put those curtains up? Yeah, sure. Technically, I could probably learn, but also I do not want to.
No, but I
and
just.
And neither does Kathy. And there we are.
And there, you know, we like, are. And that's like, and that's her right. And that's her joy. That is her right.
That is her journey.
That is her right. That is her journey. And I very much, and I see that. And I don't even, it's so funny with these shows, because like, you'd think that like that would come across from, at least from Kathy Hilton, who's literally a fucking Hilton. You know, Paris Hilton's mom is like, you know, annoying or, you know, or something. But it literally just comes across as endearing, because it's like, yeah, like that's actually who's like, she's like, she's just like, yeah, she's like, she wants to, you know, drink Red Bull and eat chips and like read 3 magazines, which is such weird behavior. But like, it was, she didn't do that because she was like, what does the audience want to see me do? They definitely want to see me. No, that's like, and that's Lisa Rinna, whereas Kathy's like, yeah, I'm just going to fucking do this thing. And she doesn't know what channel we're on even. Like,
I mean, I'm so appreciative. And it also feels like Kathy, from everything that I've heard, not that this matters, but it kind of matters. From everything that I've heard, like Kyle Richards is an angel IRL, yeah. like in her interactions with people. And I bet you that Kathy is exactly the same. It feels like these are two women who like have reached success in their own different ways, but have still been able to remain grounded when it comes to whatever relationships they have with their circles yeah. of friends or whomever. Like, I think Kathy's very, very connected to her kids mm-hmm. and to her grandkids and to doing the pretty prissy parties and whatever else. But from anything that I've heard about her interactions with people, she is very, very grounded. And the same thing with Kyle. And it makes me feel really comfortable watching these two women who didn't at any point decide that they were too good for whomever they needed to stomp on top of on their way to the top. Yeah. And it's like, it makes me feel, I'm filled with so much curiosity about Kathy. And it's like, she, you know, there's like video of her fucking singing and doing karaoke and all this shit. And it's, it just feels like this is a woman who's like on, you know, Saturn or Mars, but also yes. still in some ways like very goofy and centered and is however old and had never been on a ladies
on a girl's trip.
And is experiencing these new things for the first time on camera. Yeah. And I just love it. I'm filled with joy for her. I really honestly am.
I'm filled with joy. And I'm also happy. And maybe, I mean, that she was able, like Garcelle was like, Paris was like, you know, kind of rude. And she was like, Kathy wasn't like, how fucking dare you? She was like, okay, well, she has anxiety. And like, she was like, she's got a breeziness, like an easiness, a chillness, like a let's just ride the wave. Like, I thought you were Kyle. Like, that's like, she's got that thing that's just like, it's not at all sort of, it's water that rolls off a duck's back with Kathy. And I think that's energy that we need. And I'm happy to see it. And like, I don't really want to delve too much into like, you know, serious water with Kathy. I don't really, at least not yet. I mean, maybe we can get there, but right now she's breezing through life with her, you know, be nice girl, you go girl t-shirts that are beaded and, you know, her little pranks. And it's just a nice sort of lightness that from the Richards family, which can get so dark. It feels like Kim got all the darkness. Kathy got some of the weirdness and Kyle got the mom instinct. And, you know, it's just nice to sort of fill in the missing piece and have the piece not be dripping in darkness.
I 100% agree. And I feel like this Kathy and Kyle dynamic that we're seeing is everyone's reward for surviving the seasons of Kyle v. Kim, which were very dark. I think Kim is personally a very dark human being.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very complicated. And it's just really pleasant, for lack of a better term, to just watch these two women who have reached a point where they're like, we love each other too much to not press on, you know, the opposing sisters buttons yet.
And maybe, you know, it'll happen, but right now I love where we are. It's a little sort of like, yes, a foppish little, you know, a little duo comedy act, like amid the Crystal and the Erica, amid some really sort of like, you know, intense, the Lisa Rinna, the Garcelle, you know, it's a nice little breath of fresh. And I do appreciate it.
And who would believe that we were in a position where Beverly Hills is like fucking killing the game? This season of Beverly Hills so far is
really
unfucking believable.
It's really
so
good.
And New York is melting down.
My hot take is that New York, we need more than five. Five is too few. Five is all. Atlanta, five is too few this season. New York, five is too few. I don't care who the five are. You need at least six to seven. You need six or seven housewives because we don't get enough combinations. I will say I am really enjoying New York. I'm enjoying watching it. It's hard to watch. I really like Ebony. I interviewed Ebony for Vanity Fair before the season. I think, yeah, she was absolutely lovely. We had like two phone calls. She was like very, and she was very much what you're seeing on the show. And it's like, the thing is, Ebony, Leah tanking this season, not a good season for Leah, I think. I think Leah's having she's sort of drunk girl and Kool-Aid too much. And then also like, she clearly doesn't really, it's like the grandma stuff is like, it's very sad. I understand the connection. It's like, one, if you don't want to be there, just go to your grandma. Like, she's in Jersey. Like, you literally just get on the train and go to Jersey. Like, she's right there. Mm-hmm. 'Cause clearly you don't want to really be here. And then two, it's like, and I get like family relationships and, you know, I have grandparents and whatnot, but it's like, it's a lot of energy about a grandma. It's like, I haven't heard about her daughter once this season. It's like you're like a mom. I'm like, I understand that you're really upset, but it's like, I'm feeling a lot of it.
So listen, all of my grandparents are rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
They started going when I was like 4.
Yeah.
So it's been a minute since I had a grandparent to mourn over in the sense of like them passing and me being like, oh my God. That being said, none of my grandparents were playing the part of a maternal role.
Yes, a maternal
because
role.
Because my own mom was withholding. Mm-hmm. And that's what Leah's experiencing right now. She's experiencing the loss of the woman who played the part in many ways of playing that mom, that person that she could go to, who was a family member, who she could talk to.
Unconditional love.
Who listened. Yes. Unconditional love. Empathy, which mm-hmm. was maybe missing in
Bunny, Bunny and those crackers, not the most empathetic. Bunny and that asparagus that she was just sort of chomping on. I see that and I understand that, but I also, this is where like this is where the show comes in, where it's like we break the fourth wall. If it is this intense and if you were feeling this bad, then you should probably just go. But she kept sort of making excuses to not leave because she wants to be on the show so bad. She wants to be on the show.
Two questions for you about that. Number one, did we feel like she felt she was in a position to leave early if there was a cast of 5? Do we really think that she was? I think that she was thinking about the fact that there would only be 4 left.
Yeah.
If she went.
Well, plus Heather, who like, no, thank you. But like, I mean, thank you, mama. But like, no, thank you. But I think that's probably part of it. But I also do think, and this is the thing, and especially these, you know, first season, second season people, which is why it's good to bring in new blood, is that they sort of start to be like, oh, I'm actually a big thing. I'm actually sort of like, I'm the engine. This is like, this is making my career. This is sort of like, she's changed. Her personality has changed a little bit since the beginning of when we've seen her. And I can sort of see the effects on the show on her. And so I do understand her not going and to her grandma and like, and that was a decision that she made, and that's, you know, and I respect that, and I understand. I know I sound like a callous asshole right now being like, why is she so sad that her grandma's dying, because old people are old and people die, but I just, it can't be the excuse for every single thing, not the excuse, but it can't be like the response to every single thing. Like when she said like, I don't care about voting, my grandma's dying, I'm like, that's literally not an answer. I'm sorry, that's not acceptable to me as a Black person in America. I refuse to accept that, Leah.
You know, that moment overall
wasn't
great.
That was a tough moment for everyone.
Ebony was like, as a Black woman, this is how I feel. And Leah was like, gotta go.
Yeah, it's like,
bye-bye.
It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, and that's why it's like, I feel like Ebony is getting sort of like, I'm enjoying this season because I do like, I mean, we're like Ramona and Luann, we're seeing things, we're seeing shades of them that we've always seen, but they've never literally had to speak to a Black person before on screen. And so to watch them have to do it is actually deeply fascinating and illuminating. And I don't even mean that in terms of like, you know, necessarily completely all bad, but it is really fascinating. Sonia, I think beyond her one absolute breakdown, which was honestly thrilling to watch on camera, she's been really lovely. I identify as a Sonia, so it's like I really like, I'm always rooting for her. So I like, I do think like we're seeing her at a difficult moment, which I want to see. And I just think if Ebony had, and this is my unpopular opinion, is like I do still love Bethany, like I love like the Bethany Frankel of it all. If Ebony had like somebody to sort of take on Luann and Ramona with, who could keep up, like a Bethany or even a Carol, somebody who is sharp. I know your face. You're like, I think Ebony needs another. Leah's not pulling her weight for me this season in any capacity. And I think I need Ebony to have another person. And I think she's now going to Sonia. And I like that. I like that friendship.
Okay, here's my only question. And of course, there's going to be like 7. when you think of having Bethany be Ebony's go-to support person, you believe that Bethany would do a better job unpacking and understanding the nuances of what is going on with Ebony than Heather
would. No, and that's okay. So that's a very important clarifying question. No, and there was a really terrible Watch What Happens clip where Bethany is doing like Real Housewives of Atlanta. It's a mess. I do think this is what I think.
BCC Meghan Markle, by the way, I just have to say justice for Meghan because I'm still pissed about those.
Oh
tweets.
My God, those are
my
crazy.
God.
I do think Bethany has a level of at least IQ, not necessarily EQ, that is higher than Ramona, and this is triggering to Luann.
Yes.
That is higher than Ramona. That is higher than Luann. I think Heather is sort of smart, but Heather is so, she just isn't. She's not built for reality TV in the way that Bethany is. And I think Bethany would be smart enough to see Ebony as like someone who is literally has like got her shit together, is as quick, is as smart, is on it, is like. Is a force to be reckoned with. And that could either create friction or that could create unity. And I just think, I guess it doesn't even need to be Bethany. Bethany is just the first person that came to my mind because I do think Bethany does make me laugh. And I do think she's like, she was kind of great. I think the best thing Bethany's ever done was be on the show better than, you know, like that was her best work. Like she was very good on the show. I just think Ebony needs another person. She does, Leah is not enough of a, you know, bring back Tins, like bring back Dorinda. Well, Dorinda, I don't think would work either. But like, she's very much, I think, at sea within this 5-person cast. And Leah is supposed to be her anchor, but she's not doing the work.
And the weird thing is when it comes to the fourth wall, listen, Heather said some shit on social that was super inappropriate in the last couple days.
I haven't seen. I didn't even know. I'm like, I try to steer clear of Heather, even though it's like. I will say that Leah misused the word Karen. Like Heather wasn't being a Karen. Like that was like Leah just like pulling like a zeitgeisty word and throwing it at her to be mean because she like hates Heather, which is fine. But I was like, okay, Heather wasn't doing that. But Heather is one of those people who is like, I have two Black friends, so I'm the conduit here. And it's like, no, you don't really have any Black friends, and two, like you're not, you know, you're not, you know, a queen of critical race theory, let's say, you know, like you might think you are.
Well, Heather said some stuff online that was inappropriate and racially insensitive. She has put out some clarifying remarks since taking accountability for that and using, like, I still have so, honestly, I did a big post about it and it's like, I'm still confused because she, like, all of this happened in Instagram post comments.
Oh, God.
Replies,
oh, the minutia, like, of it all.
The minutia, the chaos. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm like, what if I miss a part of this? And that's like a big, like, I want to try to understand this as best I am, especially when I'm critiquing what someone is saying. I don't like the idea that I don't have all of the information provided in which to like make some sort of assessment in like responding in my own special way. And so she clarified also in comments, in the replies. But she mentioned in one of those comments that production shut down, was fully shut down after the Lou and Ebony argument at that brunch.
Yeah.
And that she was positioned, proposed, nominated by both production and her cast members to be the person to talk to Ebony and Leah. And that's where some of, I think, Heather's frustration about all of this.
She fell on the sword and that's what she's saying.
Right. And I also am a little confused by her language because I think that maybe somebody else was like in her account, maybe, you know, because everybody has a social media manager. And there's something she said about somebody was like using the wrong account to reply. And I really think that what is not being said here, but is maybe, I mean, it would be great if she was being explicit, but I understand why she's not. It's like maybe that wasn't her in the account at the time that was like saying this shit. But the thing is that you're still responding in the person's voice. So the fact that they thought that this would be language that she would use is still a problem.
Right. And it's one of those things where it's like Heather's like, it's just so interesting because you're seeing like with Heather on the show, at least you're seeing sort of the insidiousness of of like how like race and like specifically like Black people and Black women's interactions with white women, how coded, how like there are levels. There's like Luann, who's straight up stupid. Sorry, Luann is dumb and like being like, wait, you said you were smarter than me because you have more education. It's like, yeah, she does have more education. Education is not the same thing as intelligence. Like she was like Luann willfully being like, you know, ridiculous. And then you have Ramona, who is like maybe not, who hasn't had like something that bad yet, but like clearly is not getting it. And they have Heather, who thinks
it's just a matter of
just a matter of time. I mean, the help thing, I mean, she's been doing it for years with the help. Mm-hmm. And then you have Heather, who's like, no, I get it. But then she's like, oh, Ebony, you're so articulate. Like, I like, no social media person made her say that to Ebony, you know, at the end of the show. She said, oh, you're so articulate, not knowing, you know, how sort of like, you know, coded, you know, talented 10th, like, you know, vaguely racist that is. And again, I say this as someone who's like, who uses that word racist as like, not like now let's burn Heather and Luann and Ramona at the stake, but let's call out this behavior for what it is so that they can learn. And like, you know, I'm not saying throw them all out off the show, but like, this is what is happening. And we're seeing all these different versions and all these different ways that it comes out. Sometimes it's like, you know, very blunt and it's very clear, like Luann calling Ebony an angry woman when like Leah screams that she's a whore, and it's just like, oh, well, just calm down, Leah, like come back, you know. It's like, that's like very clear, that's very night and day. Whereas Heather, it's a little bit more complicated. And I do feel that she was probably, you know, pushed into the position to sort of do the work as try to be the conduit or the bridge here. But guess who was actually the best bridge? Guess what? She didn't do a great job of being the bridge, and Sonia did a much better job of being the bridge by just shutting up and listening and like, and hearing, and like, so it just shows that like, you know, yeah, I bet, you know, it might feel unfair, like she's getting an unfair shake. And I honestly don't even know about the answer. I try to sort of like separate myself from
you
the
gotta disassociate
because it gets too much. So crazy. And then I would start hating some of them. And it's like, I don't want to do that.
I stay away from it. I don't follow most of them because I'm like, I have enough of you guys on my TV, yeah, honestly.
But like, but I will say it's not impossible for a privileged white woman to be who she is, acknowledge her privilege, and also exist in a world with a Black woman. And I think Sonia so far, mm-hmm, for all of her foibles and flaws and alcoholism, has shown that it can be done. And I think it's something that's like, yeah, it's not as maybe easy breezy light and, you know, as fun as, you know, other drama that we've had in the past, but we have to get here as a society. We have to confront these things.
I just feel like Ebony deserves so much more than what is being presented to her or forced upon her is probably more accurate. Mm-hmm. And it's just frustrating for me because it really honestly, just for me personally, is such a these episodes are such a cringe.
They're so cringy.
They're so cringy, uncomfortable. I am angry on Ebony's behalf that she even has to deal with, mm-hmm, this. Like the... this is like such a, it's like not, this isn't in the top 30 of what she's had to experience in the, over the course of the last two episodes. But like when Heather was like, I know a lot about the Black experience. I forget the actual semantics of what she said. And Ebony was like, I would love to hear more about that. Can you tell me about that? I was screaming.
Can you tell me about your Black experience?
Can you tell me, you know, more with about that?
Spanx and Diddy for, you know, it's like, it's that, which is
yummy in my tummy.
Yummy in my tummy. Oh my God. It's that, which I find insanely watchable and like sort of like, mm-hmm, and I guess the reason why I'm like, oh, I'm enjoying it is because having talked to Ebony and interviewed her, I do think she, mm-hmm, is very much strong enough of a person to handle and deal with all this stuff. Like, I don't think that it's like, if it were like a weaker or like a less, you know, or more delicate, maybe a Sutton, maybe a Tinsley, maybe, I don't know if, you know, emotionally handle everything that's being thrown at. So maybe it's me like sort of like being like, oh, well, Ebony can handle it because, you know, I've talked to her and she seems like she can handle it, which is not necessarily fair, which is why I just wish like she did have, at the end of the day, and like, and let's bring another Black woman, let's bring another person of color onto the cast or somebody who gets it, who can hang with her, because these other women can't really hang with her, but there are more of them than there are of her. So she somehow ends up being, you know, sort of tried to be painted as the bad guy, but it's so clear that she is not. And everything, literally everything she said so far, I think has been completely true and valid. And like, I'm like, it's one of those things where it's like, I do like, I don't like Ramona, and I do, part of me loves Luann because she's so delusional and so just like, you know, so haughty and so pretentious and so, you know, she is sort of like a peak housewife. She's an iconic housewife. I mean, she fell in the bush. I mean, like, there, what's not to say about the Cabaret star, but watching her struggle with this and not be able to connect the dots in things that are really, really simple, that are really easy. Just sort of like the idea of, like, you know, the stereotype of an angry Black woman. That's like, we did this in 2014 with Alessandra Stanley, with, you know, Viola Davis and, and, you know, the Shonda Rhimes universe. Like, we've already done this. And it's like, just, and it shows how privileged people can be so disconnected. It's sort of like Kathy Hilton, but like in a, like, Kathy Hilton is so disconnected with, like, reality in some ways, that, but it's in a fun way. This is like Luann showing how disconnected she is with, like, what's going on, but like in, like, a really sort of like dark, if not dark, but in like a really, it's like
upside down.
It's a very, we're on two different upside down, which is way cringier. It's way cringier, but I do sort of relish in it. I just think, and I think Roni, I will say, don't tell me you didn't have fun when they painted the dicks. That was fun. The dick painting.
Honestly, I didn't have you that didn't much have fun. With the dick I'm painting. Sorry. I would love on a better day, a less cloudy day, I would love dick portraiture. But I just was like,
who doesn't love dick portraiture?
I mean, listen, I'm all about it. But I just, I'm riding the struggle bus, honestly, truly, with New York right now.
What do you need? What would you need to enjoy it? Or what do you feel? Or what would you?
Well, I mean, I don't, the difficulty for me is, like, I do think that there is narrative around Heather's exit that we were all planning to have that now none of us are going to have about Leah's behavior. And I don't think that that's going to happen. Yeah. And I get why. I am curious what will happen when Bershon comes in, who's the friend of.
Yeah, I think well, that's the thing. We need more. I just think we need more warm bodies in the room, because Heather is not. Heather, I'm all for bringing back sort of like a, you know, I'm like, please bring back Jill Zarin. Like, I'm all for sort of bringing back like a maligned, like, you know, housewife who from the past. And like, I'm like not even angry at Heather's presence, so to speak. And I do think it, like, we really need it. Like, I don't know what the show would be like without Leah and Heather screaming at each, you know, or Leah screaming at Heather. Like, we don't have much, but we need more warm. We need more warm bodies in the room. And like,
yeah, and I think we need more housewives. Like, Ebony was excellent casting, and we need another brand new housewife we have never seen before next season, and maybe bring back an alum. Although, frankly, in New York, that is a very, very small circle.
That is. I mean, Dorinda honestly got to, if Dorinda can channel a little Kathy Hilton and bring some light into her life, I would absolutely welcome her back. But she got to a place of such darkness and anger and vitriol that it was like not even fun to watch. I'm like, I'm glad that she sort of got the boot, honestly, as someone, you know, who loved to make it nice, you know, back in the day. But I agree. I think we need honestly, I would like Tinsley to come back.
Oh my God.
I would love
Tinsley wants to come back. We all want Tinsley to come back. She's available. She's back in New York as of, you know, via Palm Beach. Like, she's here, except she's in Florida, but that does mean she's still here.
That does mean she's still here.
She is the light. We're going to get that back.
She's the light.
We got to get that back.
And I don't even think.
We need it.
I don't even care. Again, like, not like, you know, I don't think Tinsley is going to be good for racial literacy, but she'll be good just to be like, you know, some light, some fluffiness, some airiness, because we're reaching a point with these OG women that, and Sonia sort of shows this, where it's like her life is kind of falling apart at the seams. Like, I think the Century 21 thing was a really big, tough blow for her. And like, I want her to have a win, and I love to see her have fun, and I love to see her, you know, connect with Ebony or whatnot. But you're right. We need a fresh energy, like a fresh kick in the butt to the franchise. And like, and right now, like, you think it could be Leah and Ebony, because Leah's still pretty new too, but she's acting kind of like a child. I know she doesn't like to be compared to children, but I'm just like, you know, I mean, the not voting thing aside, which is like, literally, that was insane. And like, you know, like, but we've always known she's had that sort of edge, that side of her, that, like, you know, that is like, I do what I want. She's acting like a petulant child, and I'm not here for it.
Yeah, she's giving us only reactive right now, and we need more exposition.
Yeah. And we need more exposition, and we need more engagement. I'm like, okay, you didn't really, you left painting early. You didn't do the boat. You didn't do the fishing. It's like, you gotta, you know, if you're gonna be on the show, you gotta be on the show. Be present.
And let's hear more about, be present, and let's hear more about her being Shalom. Like, as a Hebrew, yeah. Like, show me what the fuck is going on with that Shabbat shit. Shalom. Like, I want to see that. Shabbat Shalom. We're recording this on a Monday night. It's got to be Shalom somewhere. It's Shabbat. It's Shalom somewhere. Oh, my God. That actually does kind of work.
Shalom is Shalom somewhere. And I guess I should say for everyone, I guess they're doing this in the middle of a pandemic, and so, like, I should be nice and whatnot. But it's, again, but I do under, I
Your
do,
voice
I, you know,
that.
It's like, I do, I recognize that as to be true, but come on, like, let's, yeah, it feels very divided, which I think is sort of inevitable. And Heather is not the friend of my dreams, you know, mm-hmm. I'll take what we can get right now because we needed another person to sort of fulfill the dynamic. But I will say, I do think, you know, I think Sonia, I think Ebony, they're having good seasons. I think Ramona's lucky that Luann sort of had this outburst because it was going to be her. I think Ramona really got lucky. But I do, yeah. Honestly, and I will say this, Leah and Ramona, for the potty mouth stuff or whatever, it's like, yes, Leah can say whatever she wants, but we forget because Ramona literally, like, drank the devil's piss or whatever to look so good. Ramona is like 62 years 60s. Old. She's 60. Yeah. She's my parents' age. It's like, I understand mm-hmm. if she just, like, doesn't, like, that's like a generational thing. It's like, I don't think, like, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, of all of her faults, I think her not wanting to talk about taint at the dinner table is not, like, you know, is not nearly as big of a deal as, like, you know, Leah is making it seem. Like, she is an old woman. Like, let her, you know, and it's not an education thing, as Luann stupidly said. It's not, you know, mm-hmm. it's not a class thing. I honestly think it's just, like, she is just old, and she just, like, was raised in the 50s, like, or like the 60s mm-hmm. or whatever, and it was different. So I'm giving, I don't know, I'm my cold, you know, I used to be so anti-Ramona. I think my heart is, like, I won't go so far as warming, but it's thawing. I think because Luann was so spectacularly out of line and wrong that I'm like, okay, at least Ramona's shut up a little bit. Like, okay, that's rude. At least Ramona's not, has not, you know, she was on Luann's side, so I'm not even going to give her. I'll just say Ramona could be worse. That's what I'll say.
Speaking of Ramona could be worse, the episode tomorrow, so this comes out the day of New York's new episode, but allegedly Ramona's a fucking piece of shit in that. Oh, so I don't know if that's true. I haven't watched it.
Oh my God,
it, but
disclaimer, we have not watched that. So if Ramona is a monster, then I just will go back to my initial take, which is Ramona is a monster, and that is fine. A monster who needs to be on TV, but, like, a monster nonetheless. And that...
I mean, she might be a monster, but you are such a dream. Can I please tell you how upset? Where are you? You're in LA.
Oh my God. Does it look like I'm in LA? Because I have a plan.
Are you not in LA?
No, I'm in Brooklyn. I'm in Brooklyn. I'm a Brooklyn boy. Brooklyn BB.
Oh my God.
I just moved here like a couple months ago. So
where did you move here from?
I moved here from, I was like quarantining in New Jersey, and I was like, I'm from Jersey, born and raised. So I actually do even like Real Houses in New Jersey still. And so I used to live in Manhattan, then I was in Jersey for most of quarantine, and now I am back in Brooklyn.
Why did I think that you were in LA?
Oh my God, I love that. Sounds so fancy and glamorous to me. Please keep thinking about it.
And you do have a very LA looking apartment.
Oh my God.
With a plant. With the walls.
Yeah.
With the art. I'm getting, with the olive. I thought you were so.
Oh my
LA.
God.
I am so pleased.
I love to be boho chic. I love, I'm a New Yorker, so we can hang. We got to.
Yeah. I am so excited. And also, you need to come on IRL. Like, you need to, like, come to my apartment.
100%.
Heather has been here. All of our favorite people. Tons of several. The only people that are coming to mind are people who are currently very problematic.
I love
so
that.
They're just several Bravo Lovers.
You know, that's baked into our Bravo celebrities. Problematic. And let them. And you know what? And I celebrate that, you know, because that's the world. That's the world. You know, people, that's.
That
is the world. People have problems. People are problematic. And let's confront it. Let's engage. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's
not ignore it. Let's talk about it.
Yes. And if you villainize someone to the point of, you know, silencing them, then you just have one more silent person.
Yes. Or you create a supervillain, and then that's, and you know, and that's, you know, that's a Joker origin story. And that's, we don't love that. I don't want that for any of the women. I don't want that for any of them. Right. So we gotta, let's just confront it head on. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be tough. It's going to be
uncomfortable.
But let's live in that space, and let's sort of like, let's see if we can navigate our way out of it. That being said,
just be a little uncomfortable.
Yes, but Tom is worse than that, because he actually stole from widows and orphans, and that's beyond problematic. That's actually just like goodbye.
No, villainize.
That's villainized. That's villain.
Save the villain for the actual guy in that Hulu doc that you guys all need to see because of my new favorite guest, who is like killing the game right now in my heart and soul. Chris Murphy, tell the people how to follow you online, read your pieces for Vanity Fair, and so much more. Tell us.
Oh my God. Okay. So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Christress. It's like distress or distress or mistress, but with a Chris. So Christress. I tweet a lot. I love a good Insta story, so it's worth your while. I write for Vanity Fair, so you know, you can get a subscription. I think they're like $3 online.
A dollar for six years.
That's literally, yeah, it's nothing. And I'm sometimes in the magazine as well. So if you pick up a hard copy, you know, the June issue, TV issue, interviewed Hugh Grant and some fun people. So yeah, he's charming. Do you know something about Hugh Grant that people don't know? He's charming.
He is no longer allowed to come and watch What Happens. Isn't he like the only guest?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that him?
I think you're right. I didn't bring it up in my short interview with
him.
Next time I will. But yeah, so yeah. And then I also do comedy around New York and a lot of different stuff. So.
Well, I am obsessed with you, and I know that the AGs will feel the same. Guys, speaking of all things Instagram, at Dame Galley, you're not following me, and I really think that you should. I also am going to watch What Happens the day that you guys are listening to this episode. So if you want to see some behind the scenes stuff,
yes, wait, that's actually cool. I need that.
And you know who the guests are? Ryan Serhant and Heather Thompson. I'm so excited to share that with you on my IG, which you guys need to follow. patreon.com/andyscrolls starts at $2 a month, the single best way to support the pod and yours truly and my burgeoning shoe addiction. patreon.com/andyscrolls starts at $2 a month, and 5 gets you 2 bonus episodes, 10 gets you 4, and a little bit more gets you a premium level where you get to record a Patreon episode with me. What? How could that not be amazing and the best thing you'll do all year? I know it's
I'm signing
in a list.
Up. Yeah.
Amen. I'll see you there. Guys, I hope you're all staying safe, staying sane. What a week. What a Hulu doc. What a guest. What a world. Chris Murphy, thank you so much. Guys, hang in there. Get the vax if you can.
Yeah,
and we will talk